What's up? It's the ShoeCast, sponsored once again this week by Grant Stone. I'm Ben. Ticho's here. Ticho, what you wearing, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, man? Doing great. Just drank a mango LaCroix, courtesy of my brother-in-law who brought it over this weekend. Just brought over a case of mango LaCroix.
Big party.
I guess they didn't like them, and I do, so I'm drinking one. And I've got my John Lofgren engineers on. From Standard and Strange, Natural Chrome Excel. They're great, picking up a great patina, super comfy. I gotta say, man, that was you kind of caught me off guard. That was a quick breeze through of your usual intro.
Yeah, you know, I feel like at this point, if people have found a shoe podcast on the internet, they don't need to be told once again that it's a shoe podcast. We're coming into people's homes, and I like to be a good house guest, so.
Yeah, I guess you don't want to piss people off at the beginning of your stay. You want to, you know, save that for the last moment, you know. Makes perfect sense. Good call, man. Good call. What do you got on your feet, though?
All right, so I've got my new Sagara Cordmasters, their monkey boot, in black overdyed olive Badalassi Carlo veg tan leather. There's actually like a little story behind these. I ordered a pair last year from Sagara and something went wrong. Like, I think the leather ripped or whatever happened. It wasn't this exact leather. It was a different Badalassi leather. And then they couldn't get it. We were trying to figure out what to do. And then we figured something out. And then the pandemic hit. So things got slowed down, which was actually good because then Bagus from Sagara DM'd me and he's like, wait, what about this? We just got this in. We're going to dye it ourselves. This is pretty close to that original leather. What do you think? And I was like, yeah, let's do this. Pull the trigger. Natural, double midsole. The Sagara branded, which is really cool looking design that they have on it. Half soles. I mean, it's a monster boot. It's taking some work, but this is the third day I'm wearing them and they already are starting to feel better. But yeah, I'm digging them. They're fun. Love a monkey boot.
You're a big fan of anything that's got a good heft and a good chunk to it. And I think those are really fitting the bill for you. The leather just looks super cool. I can't wait to see how those age as you beat them up.
It's great. That's the goal. The original picture was, again, I forget what the color was, but it was a Badalassi veg tan leather on these Cordmasters that they were his or they were somebody else's who works at Sagara. And they were just destroyed and they look so cool. And it was one of these things where you just see it on Instagram and you keep coming back to it. You're like, I need to get these boots and then I need to wear them like fucking crazy to get them there. So that's my plan. I'm just gonna, you know, I wake up in the morning and I put them on for like break-in purposes. And then I'm like trying to like run into sticks when I'm walking around the yard. I love it.
Interesting. Yeah. So you just put them on like you know, in like movies when characters like wake up and then just like immediately put clothes on. I imagine you doing that. Like you're just wearing them to brush your teeth.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In like a montage. Yeah, that's how I'm seeing you wearing these. Your closet is full of just like 10 of the same shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To emphasize the boots.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't have people paying attention to your shirts when you're trying to impress them with your Indonesian monkey boots that they don't understand at all.
That's actually a pretty good description of my general style. So I know you're making a joke, but you're hitting really home for me.
yes and no.
I have the most boring collection of shirts because I just want people looking at my feet.
I have two cool shirts and like I don't even know when I wear them. I might not wear them ever. I put them on and I'm like, I should probably wear this one day. And then I take it off.
But then people won't be looking at your feet.
So in the first few episodes of the ShoeCast, we had a topic and we would talk about the topic. And then at the end, we would do the shoe bag, which was reader and listener and follower questions. And they were all great. And then as we started to go on for a few more episodes, we just kept talking and talking and talking about this main topic and never got to the shoe bag, which was terrible. And questions are still flooding in. And so we had to do something about that.
They're piling up. My office here is just full of like bags of mail, like that scene in Miracle
on 34th Street. Yep. Yeah, they're just dragging them in. So we got to handle that. So what we're going to do this week, and I think that we need to do periodically as it goes, if people like this and if you hate it, let us know. And if, you know, a question can be, why do you keep doing this? That's a valid shoe bag question. But, you know, if we get a good response and people like this and we keep talking too much on the other episodes, I think this is a great way to do it. Just really, really dig in. and hopefully help people get some answers to questions that they're wondering about. Sound good?
Sounds good to me. Should be fun. I mean, I enjoy talking about one thing, but I also enjoy talking about many things. So I'll talk about whatever.
We're trying to keep you sharp.
I appreciate it.
All right. So let's just launch into these suckers. First question. How do I increase the patina process on my Indie Made from Horween Chrome Excel?
Okay. So yeah, I get a variant of this question pretty often because I have a couple Chrome Excel boots, and especially my Vibergs, I think, have a pretty nice patina. And so there's no real secret to it. The secret is just wear your boots really hard. Don't baby them. Wear them when you're moving stuff. Wear them when you're going for a hike. Let them get dinged up on your office chair if that's your life.
Oh, yeah. The office chair heel patina is rampant on basically all my boots.
To me, I want the patina to reflect how I use the boots, how I live my life, have it be kind of a reflection of me and what I do and what I've done in those boots. So I don't really go out of my way to, like, you know, just go around kicking stuff. I mean, if you're a guy who's just going around kicking a lot of stuff, just keep living that life and the boots will probably look pretty cool.
Agreed.
I assume most people don't just go around kicking a lot of stuff. So just kind of stay within yourself and live your life, wear your boots to do whatever you're doing. You know, when they get scraped up, you know, I like to use Venetian shoe cream on my Chrome Excel. And I feel like that kind of enhances the patina as you're going. So when you pick up a lot of scrapes and dings and stuff like that, make sure you condition them and take care of them and brush them and wipe them down. And that patina is going to just kind of flow naturally from that. It might take years to get them where you want them, but you'll have earned it and you'll feel a deeper connection with those boots than you would if you just... I know we talked in one episode about, you know, somebody hammering boots and pouring acid on them. And that's cool, too. I mean, that I'm not trying to knock that. But, you know, that's kind of my philosophy on how I age and patina my boots.
My philosophy is you wake up, you go to your closet with all the same shirts, you put your boots on, you brush your teeth, and then it just happens naturally. It's wonderful. It's really convenient.
Yeah. You might say, hey, I'm going to go for a couple extra hikes just to get these things a little dinged up. But like, what's wrong with that? Going hiking is great. I love going for a hike.
Hiking's great, but there's nothing quite like toothpaste patina. Have you ever put on conditioner early in the process to kind of help speed things along? Because I haven't. I'm always just very, very reticent to, you know, slather those things down. I don't know, but I know people do. And even on like hardcore Pacific Northwest boots, they'll often say like, just douse these things in boot oil to help them break in, which is different, but, you know, may have that effect down the line. I don't know. Like, what do you know about that?
What I usually like to do, and I did this recently with my Vibergh Horsebutt 145 Oxfords, where I wore them for, I want to say like 7 months before I ever conditioned them. And I only did because they started looking kind of dry. But you kind of want to lock in some of that natural patina that you kind of pick up just from walking around. Like, you kind of want to get that pretty entrenched in there before you apply conditioner, because it does kind of alter the look of it. I'm like a big less is more with conditioner. I think, you know, the more you slather on, you kind of destroy that natural patina a little bit. It's sort of like being like a conservationist or like a curator at a museum, where you're like, I want to show off the kind of natural properties of this thing, but I also want to preserve it and make sure it lasts a long time. So you kind of have these like competing duties to your pair of boots or shoes, where you're like, I want this thing to develop this cool patina, but also like, I got to take care of this leather. So I'm going to, you know, apply some conditioner to it.
I mean, look, in the end, just wear them like hell. They're boots. And the Indie boot, by the way, is the number one Alden product of all time, according to the last episode of this very podcast. So
yeah, they can handle it. When you're buying high quality stuff like Alden Indies or Vibergs or, you know, things that are at that level of quality, you can usually just beat the heck out of them and they'll come back and they'll handle it. So that's kind of the nice benefit that you get of buying expensive, nice boots, is that you can beat the heck out of them and they'll be able to handle it. You don't have to worry about it too much, which is great.
I mean, not even be able to handle it, like, they're better for it. And this is different than a pair of Edward Greens, that's kind of what I always use when people are asking me this question. And then they're like, what's that? And I'm like, oh yeah, let me tell you about these $1,500 shoes. But that's different. And like, you want to keep those away from the legs of your desk chair. That's really one of the beauties of really nice boots, is that the whole point is still just take these things to town, man. Like, you're never going to do anything wrong to them if that's what you're trying to go for. And I personally think it should be.
Yeah, I think the only way you can go wrong is by kind of overthinking it, doing too much, applying too much product or, you know, trying to kind of manipulate how they're going to age. So yeah, I would say less is more, wear them hard.
Love it. Next shoe bag question. This is a tricky one. I don't know the answer yet. Which price point represents the best value?
That's a tough question, man. I think it's going to depend person to person in terms of what, you know, what you value, what your situation is. For a lot of people, getting something, you know, for around $200 from like a Meerman or a Thursday Boots, like that's going to be a good value for you. And then there's other people who are going to get a lot of value out of, you know, a $500 pair of whites or even a $700 pair of Vibergs. Although, you know, I think that's probably a harder proposition. Yeah, I think it depends on who you are, what you're looking at. I think the sweet spot is probably that $350 to $450 range where, you know, if you're looking at dress shoes, you can get the TLBs and stuff like that up to Carmina, who I think provides an incredible value at $450 on a pair of dress shoes. You can sneak up a little bit more. Enzo Bonifay, probably around, you know, $500, $550 for a hand-welted shoe provides a great value. It just depends what you're looking for, what you personally value in a pair of shoes, and what you kind of what your circumstances are in general financially.
Yeah, it's tough because the leather question enters into this. The scale gets completely skewed when you start talking about shell or other higher end leathers. Like there's plenty of boots you could say, oh yeah. I mean, you can look at Alden and say, well, look, it's $800 for a pair of shell boots. That's a great value because you got to pay well over $1,000 in a lot of other cases. Grant Stone, their shell boots are, you know, under $700. Like, it's tough to beat. Meerman sells shell boots for around $400, $450, maxing out at maybe. You know, that's pretty crazy. I think that, you know, for non-shell, you can, I would say you can easily find a way to talk yourself into $650 to $700 still being a good value for the right person because the boot is completely indestructible and it's going to last forever and you love it. But really, yeah, I mean, that sweet spot and what people, especially like non, you know, shoe addicts, when they ask me this question, you're already talking them into a higher price point than they possibly even realize existed when you're talking about $300 or $350 shoes. So I try and kind of ready them for that. And it's like, look, the sweet spot for you, you're going to have to figure out what you can stomach, is probably somewhere between $250, $300 up to $600, where you can still get like a lot of Aldens and, like you mentioned, Carmina's in there. And I think once you get your head around just what great shoes cost, you know, you start with something that it's in $200 to $300 to $400 range if you can stomach it. And if you really like them, you're probably going to find something that you like a little bit higher than that. You know, the gateway's open, and I like to think that that's a very positive thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah, everyone kind of has you know, somewhere they start, and it's usually on the lower end. I mean, for me, the first higher end stuff I bought were Quaddies, which I think I paid like $150 for on sale, and Grensons that I bought for like $225. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I just bought, you know, these really expensive, you know, shoes. And, you know, over time your perspective on price and value really shifts a lot. The offerings of the market are going to shift too. I mean, it was probably 5 years ago whenever anybody came onto Goodyear Wealth on Reddit and said, hey, what's like the best value thing I can get? Everyone would just say Allen Edmonds seconds were like the best thing you could get. They were a bargain. Yeah, I think now they've probably been replaced by those Grant Stone B grades that everyone always posts a picture of them and they're like, where's the flaw with this? They look perfect. They're like an incredible price. So
the seconds and sales market, it's not going to be a panacea for like all your shoe needs, but you can get great deals. It's a great way to figure out your size on the cheap. Grant Stone seconds, Nordstrom Rack always has incredible deals on Red Wings that are just fine. Technically they're seconds, but you can't really tell. Yeah, I mean, Vibergh sample sale, which, you know, hopefully is going to happen at some point. All those are like, they're not necessarily the easiest options. You need to be paying attention. You need to move fast. But if you're willing to put in the work, I think that's a great way to do it. And then you can, you know, you figure out if you actually like something, and then you can make a move on it whenever, you know, hopefully that price still feels right to you. Yeah. So cool. There we go.
That was a good one.
Love impossible questions that we give a vague answer to. I feel like they're very helpful for everybody.
Absolutely.
Another one that's a little more intangible, but hopefully we can get there. Why does France not get the same footwear props as Italy, England, Germany, which I don't know how much footwear props Germany gets, etc.?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I would put France as having kind of more shoemakers that I'm aware of than Germany. It's like a 2-1. It's a low scoring football match there.
My guess might be that this is from a German listener. Just a guess.
I'm proud that we have a German listener. And German listener, my hat's off to you. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think the French brands have a pretty good reputation generally and internationally. You know, Paraboot and JM Weston are certainly very popular in some markets, and including Japan. And I think in the United States, they just haven't really gotten the same foothold, the same interest from people. And I don't entirely really know why that is. And I know that's something that, as a lover of JM Weston and Paraboot styles, you I'm sure have an opinion on.
It's distribution and marketing. Again, I think there's one JM Weston store in the States, in New York, and it's fantastic. And you go in there and you want to buy 1,000 pairs of shoes, even though they're not cheap. You know, Paraboot doesn't have their own store, and they sell in Drake's, which is where I got my Avignons. But there's just not that much presence, and they're certainly not really pushing it on a U.S. audience. So, like, one, you know, for a casual buyer, they have no idea. For even a hardcore person, they might not be able to get them, try them on, etc. You know, I think that that's a lot of it. Certainly, Italian shoes, like, of all price ranges and quality, have just been a thing in the States, especially with loafers. And then, you know, the British brands, Crockett, certainly. But, like, even Trickers, like, it's not that easy to get Trickers in the States. I think they've been around forever, and their shoes are just so Trickers and iconic that once you get into this and you realize that Trickers makes great stuff, you start paying attention. Even them, it's not that easy to get.
Yeah, I think any brand that you have to seek out internationally and aren't going to be able to try on and are, you know, looking online for sizing info before you buy, you know, I think that discourages the vast majority of people who are trying to do it. I saw a poll somewhere that I think it was 75 or 80% of people just won't buy shoes online. That honestly sounds about right to me. Buying shoes online is pretty nerve-wracking and fraught with all sorts of difficulties and issues, and you have to do all this research. You know, it turns going to the shoe store into this like deep dive research project, and you have to find some weirdos online who have like tried on the shoes that you own and the shoes that you want to buy. The two of us being two such weirdos that people will reach out to. And yeah, I think you kind of got to the bottom of it there, that yeah, it's just not easy to get them here. And in places where it's easy to get them, they seem pretty popular, as they should be.
Yeah, I think there might be a bit of, especially British shoes, like definitely not Italian shoes in almost all cases, are just these massive tanks of shoes that are going to keep going forever. And the French shoes, you know, maybe seem a little...
I mean, people in America probably do have a view of the French that is, you know, maybe that they're a little effete or less of like a rugged people, which is like, I don't think it could be further from the truth. I don't know. I'm not trying to malign the French, but people in America do dislike the French, I feel like.
Until you go there and you're like, I fucking love this place.
This place fucking rules, and these people are pretty awesome. And
yeah, like they've got it figured out.
Yeah, like this is a dope country, and I would totally want to come back here and just hang out. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, props to the French shoemakers. JM Weston, Paraboot, for sure. Those are the ones that I have a ton of personal familiarity with. And then Heschung does cool stuff, which I love, especially for this question, because it sounds like a German brand.
There's also like a bunch of other shoemakers that are French-based that may or may not manufacture in France, but a lot of them are very patina-heavy, like JM La Gazelle.
I mean, we haven't even talked about Corte, some of the most distinctive shoes that you'll ever see, but you definitely have to be in the know. Like, if you aren't somebody who really pays attention to this stuff and cares and does research and listens to shoe podcasts, then like you might not know that French people even have shoes.
I was walking down the street in New York City, and like I learned of JM La Gazelle by seeing that they had a brick and mortar store in New York, and walking in and being like, this stuff looks pretty dope, and the shoes are actually well made. They'll do like whatever custom crazy patina you want on them. You know, the artists that do it are incredibly talented. But I think in general, the American market is not really seeking out that type of patina on like an everyday shoe. That's just my observation of looking at everyone's shoes all the time when I'm walking around.
It's the only thing to do. All right, look, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with more Shoebag in a second. And here we are back again with the Grant Stone Alphabet game, sponsored by Grant Stone. The first two rounds of the Grant Stone Alphabet game have been absolutely riveting.
This is where it gets tough, man. The end of the alphabet.
I have all the terrible letters here. Okay, here we go. The T is for Traveler Penny Loafer, one of their best shoes.
Love the Traveler Penny Loafer. All right. You hear they have a Chelsea coming out?
I did hear that, actually. Well, so what do you have for the letter U?
No, that was it.
That was it.
I'm so good at this.
I thought you were just making conversation. All right. V is for value, which is always one of the first words that comes out of everybody's mouth when they're talking about Grant Stone.
Well-shaped lasts. Love the shape of their last, man.
Absolutely the truth. X is for excellent, I think.
I've been stretching these things a little bit, so I'll allow that.
The only X word is xylophone. It's literally the only word.
You could take an X-ray of a Grant Stone shoe or boot to see the internal components, and it would fill you with confidence in them, I think.
Damn it, that's good.
Yeah, I told you I'm good at this.
All right, what do you got?
All right, so my last one, I got Y. Just yes. Every time I see a new Grant Stone model, I just say yes. And I do like finger guns. What's the last one? How are we going to end this thing?
Z is for zeal. And even if they didn't sponsor this, I would have great zeal for Grant Stone.
Agreed. I do too.
That's the Grant Stone alphabet, everybody. Definitely go back into previous podcasts to listen to the other Grant Stone alphabets. It's fascinating stuff, and you're going to learn a lot. Big thanks to Grant Stone. Everybody check them out. At Grant Stone on Instagram. GrantStoneShoes.com. Grant Stone. All right, and we're back. More shoe bag. Ticho, how many pies of shoe trees do you have?
How many pies of shoe trees?
Do you order trees in bulk? Let me read the question.
Okay, sorry.
Do you order trees in bulk? Also, what is your preferred brand / style?
So I wish that I had a pair of shoe trees for every pair that I own. Shoe trees are pretty essential, but as your collection grows, it starts to get kind of expensive. One thing I would recommend is we already talked about Nordstrom Rack, hopefully we can get like a Nordstrom Rack sponsorship, because Nordstrom Rack actually does sometimes come in clutch in this hobby. But they sell shoe trees there. I think they're like $15. They're just rebadged Woodlore trees. They're pretty good. They're not like the best quality ones, but I think they are the split toe. Like they're nice.
Oh yeah, I have 8 pairs of those maybe.
Yeah, you can sometimes get them on sale. Other than that, like I just piece it together. Sometimes you get shoe trees when you buy a pair. People, I always ask for them as gifts, because people are like, oh, I want to get you a gift for your hobby. You're really into shoes. And I'm like, get me a pair of shoe trees. I need
to start doing that. Do they get you good ones or bad ones? Like what do you end up getting when people give them to you as gifts, or the whole range?
There's really like very few bad shoe trees that you can get. I mean, if you clarify that you need cedar ones, you're usually going to end up with something made by Woodlore or Rochester. Yeah, one year I asked for them, and my in-laws bought me some from Macy's that are, they're Rochester, the same as Alden trees, but they're from Macy's, and you know, instead of costing like $40, they cost like $25, and they're great. They're great. They do the trick, and they're really nice, and they've held up really well. So that's my recommendation: is ask for shoe trees as a gift from everyone that you know.
That's perfect. What do you think of, and have you ever used like really, really high-end shoe trees, maybe lasted shoe trees that you haven't gotten with a pair? I have one in my pair of Chelsea Edward Green Oxfords that I never wear, like aren't even, they're in a box because my wife doesn't know about them and doesn't listen to this podcast, but that's it. And I've never spent coin on really high-end shoe trees. I think $40 at the Alden store when I got my long wings, I was like, well, I need these, obviously.
Right.
But that was it. Have you ever dabbled?
I've never dropped money on it either, because I feel like just the regular ones that you get do the trick. Maybe not the best if you're really getting into, you know, super high-end stuff. Like, you know, I have Hiro Yanagamachi's. I just put regular shoe trees in them. It's maybe not the best, but the lasted shoe trees, I think, were like $500 or something. So I skipped it. I have other stuff that's had lasted shoe trees. I mean, Vosh will usually include them. And it is kind of cool that you can really just like, real quick, jam them in and out, knowing that they fit perfectly. But otherwise, I don't think they provide a lot of value that isn't provided just by regular shoe trees.
Some of the really high-end ones do look pretty cool, but then they're just inside a shoe anyway. So, like, what's the point?
Yeah, like, I love those, like, hollowed-out ones where it's almost like a tube. I just feel like those are very fragile. You know what I mean? Like, if you drop it or your kid gets a hold of it or something like that, like it's just gonna break really easily. Probably won't. Like, it's still made out of wood, obviously, but it just, to my eye, looks a little bit more fragile. But they look super cool. I'm not sure they work any better. I have no idea.
Me neither. I don't feel worse about either of us for just kind of Nordstrom racking this whole situation. It works.
Yeah, go with what works. And look, we're spending all this money on shoes. You gotta save some pennies somewhere, right?
They really should be sponsoring us. I think you're right. All right, maybe a quick one. Boots in summer? ?
Absolutely is my answer to that. I wear boots year round with wool socks. I don't have a problem with it. I think if you're wearing a nice pair of leather boots, the leather's going to breathe. Your wool socks are going to breathe. The wool is going to regulate your temperature, kind of help you stay at a nice equilibrium. I think it's great. I mean, there's a place for wearing like a hand-sewn boot shoe, Ranger Mach type of thing. Flash some ankle, get some breeze going. Maybe you're wearing shorts. I'm not a big shorts guy, so I'm mostly wearing jeans or chinos, so the boots work just fine. That's me. I love boots, so I don't want to give them up for a major part of the year.
Same. I never stop. Really, really hot day, depending on what you're doing. Yeah, I mean, I'll wear some hand sewns. I've actually been wearing my Viber slip-on sneakers a lot recently, but that is like just kind of chasing the kid around if I'm actually like going and doing anything. Yeah, it's not exclusively boots, but I never stop wearing them. I mean, I'm wearing a pair of like very, very heavy, serious boots right now with some tube socks, and I'm feeling wonderful about myself. It's like 82.
You going chup or chup?
I think it actually is chup, but I was brainwashed by the confectionery lollipops Chupa Chups.
I was going to say, I never see the word chup without thinking about Chupa Chups. I love those things. They're great.
They're really good. Nobody ever made a lollipop like that before, and probably not since.
Can I tell you why I love Chupa Chups the most?
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with like the flavors or anything, but they had those like kind of plastic sticks.
Yeah.
And so I have this thing where I hate touching kind of like rough, dry surfaces, like a tongue depressor or like a lollipop stick. Like, I touch it and it sends a shiver up my spine. I hate it.
But lollipop sticks aren't dry at all. Like, that's the problem with them, is that they get wet and deteriorate, and you're like probably going to eat some paper.
Dude, when I eat like a popsicle, I have to like wrap the wrapper or a napkin around the stick. I can't touch it. But Chupa Chups, never a problem. So I always loved a Chupa Chup.
Cool. Yeah. All that was cool. Thank you for being cool.
That's just one of many strange things about me. And Chupa Chups reminded me of it.
All right, let's do another functional one here. What's the best way to store boots and shoes if you don't have a ton of space?
This is probably one for you, living in Brooklyn with an innumerable amount of shoes hidden around an apartment. I live in the suburbs, so I just put them in one of my multiple closets. But when I did live in an apartment, you have to like maximize space. You got to ditch those shoe boxes. Unfortunately, a lot of them are cool, but actually not very efficient to keep them like that, unless you kind of can stack them up in your closet somehow. But I had better luck with getting like a little rack, which you can usually get at IKEA for pretty cheap, just so that you can kind of stack up, you know, 6 or 8 pairs. I know a lot of guys will have like a kind of a bookshelf situation where you can hold 20, almost 20 or more pairs on the right bookshelf. Right now, I've got like all those things going. I've got a bookshelf. I've got a rack in my basement here. I've got racks in both closets. At some point, you just kind of give up and are shoving them everywhere. How do you keep everything straight in a smaller space?
Yeah, so I've got a bunch of racks, 3 levels. You can only put non-boots on the lower 2 levels. Like, they're designed for sneakers or women's, you know, low shoes. And then you can, you know, get 3 pairs of boots on each of the top. So that solves a bunch. And that's kind of, you know, the display rack, the best stuff, the things that you wear most often. I actually keep just enough boxes. Like, you can't keep empty boxes around. Like, you can't do that. But yeah, like stacking them in closets, like the top shelf of the closet that just kind of like keeps going up. You put shoes in there and you figure out how to get them out. The downside of that is that you're going to forget to wear those shoes. You know, double-edged sword there. What else? I mean, I shove boxes under like the dresser that's raised up off the ground, kind of forget about those ones. At one point, I had, it was a pretty small apartment, and I was living by myself, and I just had them lining, it was like a box, and I had them lining every single inch of the perimeter of the apartment except for where the couch and the TV were. And then my now wife, you know, started dating, and she's like, no. You know, that forced me to get more creative. I don't know. It's tough because, like, you want them out to look at them. That's fun. And you want them out to look at them and say, I should wear these today. And when you get into tough spaces, it's, like, a little tricky. Some of my boots are, like, on the closet shelf that, like, a bunch of, you know, shirts or sweatshirts or whatever are stacked up on. And then I kind of, like, just put the front of the boot, like, under the sweatshirts or sweaters or whatever it might be. That's pretty crafty.
You're a crafty guy, man.
I don't know. I need to, like, we might have to come back to this one in a future shoe bag episode, and I'll walk through my entire house and see, like, where I'm actually storing shoes in ways that I've, like, long forgotten about the, like, the desperate ingenuity of it all, and I'll, like, give a full recap.
And you might find some that you've forgotten about.
I actually did that the other day because I was doing something that required me doing a significant amount of rearranging and cleaning, and some pretty quality stuff popped up. I gave a couple of them away to lucky Stitch Down Premium subscribers.
Yeah, I have that same problem where I kind of have everything spread out so that I can't do a proper census of it. Like, I did this the other day. I was looking for a pair of my Hansones. I realized that, yeah, there's two or three other pairs of Hansones just tucked in this cabinet near my front door. And I was like, oh, yeah. Forgot I had burgundy suede boat shoes. So I'll wear these today. And they were awesome. So,
oh, wait. You know what else I have? I have, and I got this more for sneakers back in the day, but it's one of those things that you get at Bed and Bath or whatever. And it's got these hooks that go over the top of the door. And then it drapes down on the back of a closet door. And it has all these little pockets. And you can fit, I don't know, 20 pairs of shoes, 15 at least, on the back of the closet door. It's, you know, 7 feet tall. Yeah, I'll put, like, Hansones in there, some shoes that I don't wear as much. You can't put boots in them. I mean, you could, I guess, depending on, like, how much other shit you got in your closet. But those are really helpful.
Yeah, I actually have one of those, too, but I don't have it set up at my house because I don't have the right door for it. My closet doors are kind of like accordion doors. Also, I just want to go back. You said you bought it at just Bed and Bath. I like that you're refusing to go beyond. You're like, no, I'm right here. I'm just staying in the bed and the bath. You guys go beyond. I'm staying here.
I mean, if you, like, at least the store near me, like, the whole front section is kitchen, which is just encompassed within beyond, which is, like, I mean, that's pretty much the store, right? I mean, they have, you know, very, very appealing high-end art that you can get to put on your wall, and there's, like, you know, 7 pieces of it, and I guess somebody's buying it. The Beyond is kitchen, but, like, no, I don't get kitchen stuff from there. I don't think I ever have.
I feel like the Beyond, I always felt like, was all the as seen on TV things that they sell there that are just all really stupid, you know what I mean? Like, the, like, what was it called, like, the Snuggie? Like, they were big into Snuggies back in the day.
I kind of wanted one of those.
I still do.
Like, just as a joke, but I actually would have worn it 100%.
Yeah, toss on, like, a belt somehow, and you can just wear it like a tunic that, you know, has your butt kind of exposed.
Yeah. I mean, I also want, like, the flannel pajamas with a butt flap that, like, a bear would wear in a cartoon, so.
Yeah, I feel like J. Crew for a while had those on clearance, and I thought about it way too many times. But I was like, nah, my wife is going to make fun of me if I just start walking around the house wearing this. Either that or she's gonna want one too.
That's positive.
Yeah.
All right. So another kind of big complicated one. We'll see how this goes. This might be the last one, but is branding important for lesser known shoemakers that produce quality products?
Yeah, I think absolutely it is. Just because you aren't as well known doesn't mean that you can't, you know, have cool branding and, you know, provide, like, you know, some of the kind of extras that, you know, larger companies will kind of do to give you that really nice kind of experience of opening up a package and opening up the box and bags and all sorts of stuff like that. One that comes to mind is Benzene. So I ordered a pair of Benzenes and they showed up. You know, I opened up the box and it was like this really nice blue box with the logo on it. And then inside, the, you know, the boots were in bags, and then it included like a tote bag, and the box, like, fit in the tote bag.
Hmm.
And I was like, yeah, that is that's on point right there. I like it. Because I just immediately put the box in the bag and then started carrying it around. If I had been at like a store, I would have been really impressed at how well this box fit in this bag and how it all fit together and kind of gave a nice experience. So I think, yeah, even if you're a small brand, you obviously it's tough. It costs money to do that, but it does give a nice experience, and it almost kind of elevates it a little bit to, you know, even if it was a less expensive purchase, it makes it feel like an expensive purchase and feels like a special thing that you've purchased. So I think branding like that can be really powerful when done really well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. Nobody's, you know, ever given me a tote bag to carry around the shoes that I just got in the mail, but everybody loves a tote bag. I think of branding as those things, but also to me, even more importantly, like a brand is about what you're doing and making people understand that and then making them remember it. I think it plays into a lot of what you said in terms of remembering it. Like you're telling me the story about this tote bag, and it kind of sticks in your head, and that goes to what's the name and like what does your photography aesthetic look like, and is that something that's distinguishable when you see it very briefly, like on Instagram or in the world or passing a store or whatever it might be. I mean, I think those things are essential for everybody, right? Like you're creating aesthetic products, and all the other aesthetics surrounding it have to match up to that and convey the second part, which is the same message. And like, to me, it's what are you doing? What are you making? What does it look like? Obviously, but what's inside? And how are you conveying that to people in a very, very simple and natural way? You know, it's like an old writing cliche, like show, don't tell. Like you can't just tell people that you're making something good. You have to figure out ways to convince them that it's good, even in a lot of cases, before they actually see it or feel it or try it on. You know, to me, that's all branding, and it all kind of goes together. And I think it's very, very difficult to have any level of success without doing these things. Like, of course, word of mouth is very, very important, but how'd you find out about it in the first place? That comes down to brand. And if you have a brand that doesn't have quality behind it, then who cares? What's the point? And you know, you're just kind of trying to snow everybody. But if you feel like you're doing something that's really, really good, like spending that time and investing in it is very, very worthwhile. And like, you know, that's what's going to get people to stay, and it's going to get them to convince other people to get in. And you know, that's how you build a shoe business, because let's face it, all this stuff is fairly niche.
That's a great point. And even for larger companies that are making great products, branding is super important. It's pretty often that we'll be on the Stitch Down Premium Discord and someone will post, you know, something that was posted by a big brand, and we'll kind of clown them for it. It can work both for you and against you if you're doing it in a way that, instead of making yourself seem more attractive to your potential customers, you are kind of alienating them. So it's something you have to be pretty careful with and very adept at sensing what's the right approach to it.
Yeah, and look, like the weight of an established brand is a heavy thing to carry, but the fact of the matter is that if people are sitting around in a Discord clowning on what somebody did, you're still talking about them. Another old axiom, like, you know, all press is good press. You know, there's something to that too. I don't think that they're doing it intentionally necessarily, but they've built up enough clout to be in these people's heads to have them take time out of their day to be like, can you believe this? You know, they did something right in the first place.
Yeah. And this is, you know, it's certainly a brand that people are still not turned off to the point of not wanting to buy many of their products. I mean, that's not what's happening in there. It's really just like, why are they doing this? This isn't what we want as your customers. Like we don't want to see your products this way. And so I think aligning how you want your customers to see the products with how they want to experience them is pretty tricky, but can be important.
I don't know. I mean, I always love a brand that just says, fuck it, we're doing our own thing. You know, if it works. But like, you got to have the goods to be able to sit there and do that. I don't know. It goes a lot of ways, but yeah, think about it. Think about how people are going to see you. Like that's ultimately what brand is, right? How are they going to see you? How are they going to understand you? How are they going to remember you? So yeah, I mean, I would say do it. All right. I think we've got time for one more. This is probably one of the most important questions that we've gotten ever on this show. And we get a lot of really important ones. This question is for Ticho. the co-host. Why the hell is your name Ticho Blanco Shoes anyway?
Yeah, I get this question pretty often. And here's the story behind it. So my name is Patrick. When I was in high school, I was the assistant manager of a fast food restaurant.
Which one?
It's only in New Jersey. So like most people never heard of it.
Tell me.
So it's called the Windmill. Gourmet hot dogs.
Never heard of it.
Exactly. Great place though. If you're like down at the Jersey Shore, find a windmill, go get a hot dog, get a cheeseburger. The cheese fries are exceptional. That's my wife's favorite. I actually ate there like a week and a half ago. And so I worked there, and the guy who was the manager, whose name was also Ben, he was from Oaxaca, Mexico.
Great guy.
Love that guy. He was a really good friend for the couple of years I worked there. He would give everybody these, you know, kind of, I guess, like kind of Oaxacan style nicknames. I'm not sure, you know, where the basis of this nickname convention is, but you basically would take like the second syllable of someone's name or the last syllable of their name and then just kind of like put a little tweak to it. So instead of Patrick, I became Ticho. So he was taking like, you know, Patricio. So taking that T-I-C and then putting a little zing to it. Other nicknames that he would have for people would just be like his nickname was Borrego because he looked like a sheep, apparently, to his friends.
Good luck.
He had a friend Chencho because Chencho looked like a pig. These are great. I loved all these nicknames. And so he nicknamed me Ticho. But one day I noticed in his phone, he had saved me as Ticho Blanco because he had another friend named Ticho.
You were the Blanco one?
And I was Blanco, which is white in Spanish.
I'm aware.
I thought that was hilarious. I started using it as like an online name after that. When I made my Instagram, I already had at Ticho Blanco as just like a personal Instagram where I just kind of posted pictures of my dog or like a sandwich I ate. And so I added the shoes to be like, well, here's the one that's about shoes. And now everyone thinks it's like a shoe company or something and get a lot of messages of like, how can I order your shoes or where to buy? And I'm like, sorry, I'm just a guy. These are my shoes. It's not a, I do work at a shoe store, but that's unrelated to this. But yeah, that's the story. That's the story. It's based on my Oaxacan nickname from working at a fast food restaurant in like 2007.
I'm surprised you didn't call you Ticho Rojo.
Why?
Or Red.
Why? Why would he call me that?
What color is your hair?
Oh, my hair's not red.
It's approaching it.
I mean, when my beard gets pretty red.
Maybe it's the beard.
At 17, I wasn't growing that beard. I mean, that beard was nowhere to be found until last year, basically.
That's fair.
Yeah. I never even attempted to grow a beard until last year because I was going to Norway and I was going to see Lars from Usma Boots, who has like one of the greatest beards of all time. And I was like, I'm going to grow a cool beard to kind of match with him. And of course, his beard was still way better than mine, but I feel like I at least looked kind of respectable. And multiple people thought I was Norwegian and tried to talk to me in Norwegian. So I felt really good about that.
Dude, it's good. And you got to be working towards young, cool Harrison Ford and Blazer. And like, right. He's got a light beard.
Exactly.
You actually told this story like in my proximity. And I've never asked. I always just accepted it. When we were at Mark Albert's factory, like he must have asked you and I was too busy like taking like video of somebody like those machines that stitch the patterns onto the Western boots that they also make at the factory.
The one that ran on floppy disks?
It was like the 5.25 floppy disks. It wasn't even the 3.5 or whatever.
That machine was super cool.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And I heard him telling, I was like, I should probably go listen to this. It's like, maybe I'll ask him in the 5.5 hour car ride on the way home. And then I didn't. Like, we talked about the wings at, what was that place?
Oh, was it Players? Or no, Tailgates.
Tailgates with a Z.
Tailgates with a Z.
I think it was Tailgates with a Z. Fantastic wings. Go. Look, I think that's it. We answered a bunch of questions. As usual, we thought we would do more, but we didn't. But these were good. And I think that we should do this definitely periodically. And get through it, and we'll see if we can get them into other episodes because, again, we have a stack of questions. Make that stack bigger. Email me, Ben at Stitchdown, DM either of us, at Stitchdown, at Ticho Blanco Shoes, or just at Ticho Blanco, which Ticho should definitely let you follow to see those sandwich pictures.
Nah, I like deactivated that years ago.
Just give it a shot. He's lying.
Yeah, I didn't want anybody to get confused. You know what I was trying to do? It was a branding play. Where I was like, I don't want my brand to get confused with this other account. Branding is important.
I think that's brilliant. You're seeing it. You know what to do. That's it. follow the podcast, leave a review, all that stuff. We'll see you next week. Take care of your shoes.